session number 30649, Mr. Ted Hill, Reel 8. Now, you were just going to tell another story about two Marines.
Yeah, two Marines, Sergeant James and Corporal Hamill, were going ashore on some clandestine operation that was kept very secret, what was happening.
Did you ever find out what it was?
No. But they went ashore, and they were dropped ashore. This is in North Korea. And they were never seen again. When the boat went back at their pickup time, they were obviously caught and killed or whatever, but we never knew. But they were dead because they never turned up anywhere.
And this was actually behind North Korean lines.
Yeah, yeah. Sergeant James and Corporal Hamill. They're still commemorated on the ship with the Chinese steward, Lee Su, who were the three casualties of the Korean War. On the Belfast, that is. I can't remember any other incidents that strike a chord.
So where would you go in between? You know, you go out bombarding, then where to? Back to Okinawa or to Kura?
No, back to Sasebo.
Sasebo, and that's the American place, wasn't it? Now, what was Sasebo like?
Well, it was a beautiful harbour, massive place. This bay was about 2 miles long. And Sasebo was at the head of the bay, so we could anchor where we were told in this bay, which might be a mile from Sasebo, and we had to get boats in. But the Americans laid on fair-sized landing craft that carried 200 or 300 blokes to take us ashore and bring us back and all that, Liberty men. But we would go out. The longest patrol we did on the Korean coast during the 50-52 commission was 6 weeks, and you go back in for a couple of days so that both parts of ship could get a run ashore, and then off we'd go again.
So you weren't just a couple of days then?
Oh yeah, it's very short.
So what would you do ashore at Sasebo? I mean, what was there for you? I mean, was it
well, there was shopping. Now, Japan was still an occupied country then, and we were the only customers, so things were very, very cheap. I mean, we all bought Japanese porcelain tea sets packed in boxes of straw that you could throw and they wouldn't damage. Well, and they were 1,000 yen for one of these tea sets, and that was £1. And for 1,500 yen, which was £1.50, you could get one with a picture of a geisha girl in the bottom. So when you held it up to the light, you got this picture of the geisha girl, head and shoulders, I should add. And they were beautiful. I mean, I bought one with a geisha girl in and a coffee set, which when I eventually got home, I gave to my mother. My mother had it for years, and she gave it back to me when my daughter was 15 and said, you keep this now, put it in your loft, and when Lorraine gets married, give it to her, which I did. And my daughter at that time worked for British Airways, and she used to have the free flights everywhere, and she went to Tokyo for a week on a free flight, and she came back, and this would be in the 80s, early 80s. She came back and said, Dad, I saw my tea set in a store in Tokyo. She said, it's the same picture in the bottom and the same pattern. She said it was £150, or the equivalent of £150. But we got it so cheap. I mean, the armed forces in Japan were the only customers they had, which was great for us. I mean, we used to get load. I mean, I've got stuff all over the place that I've bought in Japan.
What were Japanese bars? Would you go in Japanese bars or would you go in American bars? Yeah, do you know, I mean, American canteen bars?
Well, we went in the American, they were the cheapest. There were bars ashore. There were dance halls with bars, but they were very expensive compared to the American PX.
So what were the American PX bars like? The PX is a shop and canteen. Well,
it's their equivalent of our NAFI. I mean, everywhere in England, Army, Navy, Air Force, ships, all had a NAFI canteen where you could buy whatever. The American PX was the same, except it was a lot cheaper than the NAFI. Because the NAFI was manned by civilians in uniform. They uniformed, and whatever service they were serving, they uniformed them, but they were civilians and paid civilians. Whereas, if I remember, in the PX was manned by service people. Well, they certainly were in Japan. And they were non-profit making. And every 3 months, I suppose they did the books every 3 months. If they'd made any profit, they'd have a free night. And they used to let us go in for these free nights, you know. And you'd go up the bar and for a beer, and they'd give you a case. And everything they sold, peanuts and all that sort of thing that you didn't get in the NAFI, they'd give it to you. Carton of 200 Lucky Strikes with a lighter stuck on the side. Yeah, I have them, you know. It's all free for that one day. And we lapped it up. We were lucky enough to be on a couple of them, one in Pusan, where there was an American naval canteen, and they wouldn't let the soldiers in. And there was only one American ship in Pusan at the time we were there, so there wasn't many sailors. So we had the complete run of this naval canteen where everything was free. Great days.
Yeah. Now, anything else about your time at Sasebo? So what was did you ever go to the Japanese, the dance hall?
Yeah.
What was it like?
Well, it was a taxi dance.
Can you just explain?
You bought a ticket, and to dance with one of the girls, you had to give her one of the tickets you'd bought. I don't know how the term taxi dance comes into it, but you bought the dance through the management. You know, you buy the tickets off the management, and you give a girl a ticket, and she has to dance with you. But the drink was dear. And could be dodgy.
In what way?
Especially spirits.
Do you mean watered down cut with other things?
Cut with other things. I mean, there was a ward in the hospital at Kure, which was run by the Australians, but it was British servicemen were there as well. But there was a ward in the hospital there of hard drinkers from these Japanese various spirits, especially whiskey, and lots of them were going blind from their drinks. I mean, I never ever drank spirits except in the British or the American canteens. Never ashore in the bars.
You didn't trust them.
No. And we were advised not to eat in Japanese places because in those days, they used human waste as manure on the farms. So all our stuff came from Hong Kong. All our food was shipped up on British, you know, ships. And we were told on no account should you eat anything ashore. And I saw the effects once of a bloke who'd eaten ashore. And he came up, God, his head was like a strawberry, you know.
A rash.
Red and, but it was such a terrible rash that the surface of his face looked like a strawberry, like little diamonds with black. Oh, it was horrible. And he'd been eating ashore. He'd eaten in a Japanese calf.
Now, how'd you get on with the Japanese generally?
Very good. There was no incidents at all with Japanese. They were very, very polite, helpful, totally different from what they were in the war, in the Second World War, where they were, you know, I mean, but you've got to allow that they were a different culture to us. To surrender, the Japanese would never surrender. You know, that's why they treated our prisoners so badly, because it was a disgrace to surrender. They fought to the death for the emperor. But they were completely different than when we were there in the 50s, which was only, 5 years after the war.
So there's no hangover that you could see from it?
No.
Now, so you were going back for a couple of days, then back out on another mission?
Yeah.
Any more? A couple of things. What about your laundry or cleaning your clothes when you were at sea? I mean...
There was a laundry on board, manned by Chinese.
And did you use it? Because you'd have to pay for that, wouldn't you?
Only for uniforms, white uniforms, which we did our own washing. I mean, someone in the department, or a few of them, would own a bucket, a very clean bucket, and you'd borrow it for a sipper of your top. When I got a top, that is. But they would let us youngsters borrow the bucket, and we'd wash everything ourselves. We'd buy washing powder or scrounge soap from the engineer's store, what they call Pusser's Hard, which was about 2 inches square and about 6 inches long, these blocks of soap.
And would that work with salt water? Was it salt
water? No, fresh water. If we went on to salt water, they issued special soap, which does froth in salt water. It's funny you say that, because a couple of months ago, they found a box of soap stashed away somewhere, and it was salt water soap. Because they tried it and it didn't work. And they gave us a bar, and I tried it in salt water and it worked. So it was salt water soap. But we used to do all our own washing. Because a lot of the stuff you didn't iron anyway.
So what about drying?
In the boiler room.
Of course.
The top of the boiler room, we had lines rigged. And it would dry in a couple of hours. But white uniforms were very difficult, you know, to dry and iron and all that without getting a mark on them. So invariably you'd pay the laundry to do them, which is only a few coppers, a few cents really. It was probably expensive to have all your dough being done in the laundry.
But now what about the heads? Well, you know, the toilets, the heads as I presume they were called.
Yeah, the heads were next door to the stoker's mess deck, actually, which is now the walrus calf.
Well, that's where the toilets were.
No, that was our mess deck.
Sorry, yes, that's right. You said that before. I'm getting confused here.
Yeah. Have you been in the walrus calf? Well, I've talked to children in there, a class of children, 30, and it's been crowded. Now, over 100 of us lived in that space. But next door to it, going forward, was the ship's company heads. That was to serve the whole ship's company.
And what was it like? How big?
Car.
Is it still there? I'm sorry, I don't know.
No.
I don't know it that well.
There's toilets there, but they're modern toilets. They've been divided, and there's ladies and gents.
So what was yours like? In
ours was quite a big space, and there was two rows. Well, there was a little passage went in, and there was toilets either side of it. These are sit-down toilets. They had shields round about this high, so you could talk to the bloke next door.
About 4 foot.
Yeah. Your head and shoulders were above it.
When you were sat down.
You sit on the throne and talk to your mate next door. And the bloke in front, the other side, there was two rows of them. There must have been about 24 toilets, and there was tills at the front, piss tills, a row of them on the front of the toilets where you come in, because there was two doors, one either one forward of the other one, and there was probably, I don't know, about a dozen tills. Which reminds me of an incident once when one of the islands was invaded. We took on troops to land to retake this island from the North Koreans. And we took on a couple of companies of Turkish soldiers. And honestly, it was unbelievable. They made no arrangements for these Turkish soldiers. They slept on the deck in the passages. No bedding or anything. And in the morning, we all went, first stop was, you know, to have a pee. And we couldn't get in. All these Turkish soldiers was having a wash in a piss till, because there's a constant flow of seawater going through. And they were in there washing their faces in the tills with salt water, no soap. And they fed them, and then we landed them, and they went away. But they obviously didn't have anything different, you know, they didn't know any different. And of course none of them spoke English, so we didn't, and they were discouraged from talking to us by their, I suppose, their sergeants and corporals. But that was the ship's company toilets next door, which one seaman and one stoker had the job of keeping them clean. That was their partnership, and they, well, that was their job for the commission, if they wanted it. The bloke, the stoker, he was on my mess when I was there as a junior, and he was called the, you know, the shithouse dodger, and his name was Turd Hewitt. That was his nickname, of course. But
did they want to do it? Or I mean, was it easy job? I mean, it's not nice, I presume, but I mean,
cushy number. Yeah, I mean, they didn't. I mean, sailors are generally clean anyway, so there was no. I mean, they used the toilet and that was it. If it was dirtied a bit, they would come along with a brush sometime during the day and clean it. So it was a cushy number, an old. Old Turd loved it. He wouldn't have had it for you know, he was a one badge stoker. He'd been in about 5 or 6 years and he was sort of entitled to a cushy number. No watch keeping.
Now, were you still a boy throughout the time at Korea? I'm trying to work out when your birthday is.
September.
So were you still on ops then?
Well, yeah. Now, I joined it in January 1950. Now, I was 17 then. I was a junior up until about April or May time. January, February, March, yeah, April. And I was made a stoker in April.
Now, would that be an ordinary stoker?
Yeah, just what they called a buff stoker.
And what difference did that make?
Well, my pay went up about sixfold from a boy to a young man. I can't remember the figures, but I know it was a heck of a jump, because as a boy, I was a junior, I was only getting sixpence a day, which was 3 and 6 a week.
No. Did you get a rum ration then?
No.
You're still not. Is it at 19 then?
21.
Oh, it's 21, right. Yeah. I'm misremembering, yeah. Did it make much difference when you became an ordinary stoker, other than the money, or was it just...
Well, I could do other jobs. If you were selected in some way as having potential, they'd move you around on other jobs, which I did.
So what other jobs were you moved to then?
Well, I kept on as Tiffy's mate with John Freston.
Now, you said you were going to talk a bit more about John Freston or Preston.
Freston.
Oh, I misheard. Freston.
F-R-E-S-T-O-N.
So how had you got on with him? You were going to talk about him a bit more later, so possibly now's the moment.
He was a great bloke, old John Freston. I didn't know it at the time, but he was quite religious. But he came out the Navy at 12 years. Most Tiffies stayed on for 22 or more for pension, you know, but John didn't. He came out. And he went into an engineering firm, and he was there for 10 years, because 12 years in the Navy, he would have come out when he was 30 years old. Went in an engineering firm up in Norfolk and got made redundant when he was 40. And he looked around and couldn't decide what to do. And he read about going into the ministry, becoming a vicar. And he could get a grant and all that. So he was, you know, quite a religious bloke by all accounts. And he went that route. He went to college for a couple of years on a grant and became a vicar. Now, when me and another bloke formed the Belfast Association.
I've led you astray there. We'll come back to that again then. Tell us a bit about him when you knew him as an ERA then. Well, I mean, what was he like? What did he teach you? Because, I mean, it was part of training.
Very nice bloke. I mean, he used to, you know, if we had to, or he had to work on a valve, say, in a system, he would make me track the system back and where it came from and what it goes and what it does, and he would explain it all to me. You know, I would track it out and then he would explain it, why it does this and why it does that. Very patient, and he was a very good teacher, old John. But my memories of him then was he was a lovely fella, you know, and he still is actually.
Now, so After when you became a stoker, what other jobs were you put on?
I graduated from the engine room after the boiler room after a short time, and was put on engine room watch keeping.
Now, what's engine room?
The forward engine room. Because A boiler room and the forward engine room are sort of, well, A boiler room supplies the forward engine room.
And so what do you do on forward engine room watch? What do you do?
Right, well, there's two sets of engines in each engine room. Well, the forward engine room, they supply the outer shafts. The after engine room, the engines are right together and they supply the inner propeller shafts. The staff in the forward engine room, there would be the officer of the watch in charge. There would be a chief ERA who was chief of the watch, and he was there to sort out anything. On each throttle, there'd be an ERA who'd got his engine room ticket. With each ERA on the throttle would be a stoker. Because the Tiffy, as we call the RAs, he couldn't leave the throttle. Because, I mean, if the telegraph went, he had to obey it instantly. So he needed a stoker. Our job was to go round all the engine thermometers, all the bearings, which were oil-fed with sight glasses. We had to go round them once an hour with a bit of paper and note all the temperatures and then enter them in the engine log at your side. And if you found there was a deviation in the figures, you know, you'd tell the Tiffy. And he would, if something needed doing, he'd call the chief of the watch over. And the chief of the watch would either take the throttle while the Tiffy went to sort it out, or the chief of the watch would go and sort it out. Yeah, depending on his mood, I suppose.
And what sort of thing might be wrong?
Well, the oil supply might be restricted, so the bearing's starting to warm up. You know, if the last temperatures were all, say, 80, and then there was one 86, you know, there'd be a reason for a jump like that. So they'd go and investigate it. Because, I mean, these rotors on a turbine, I mean, the bearings are about 6-inch diameter, and they had to have a constant supply of oil, so they floated on oil. Although they weighed several tons, they had to have a film of oil between the shaft bearing and the housing bearing, otherwise it would just, you know, just seize up. So there was all these checks, and they were made every hour, 24 hours a day, and the figures were looked at all the time, because whenever you'd fill the figures in, I mean, if there was a big anomaly that jumped out, you'd tell the Tiffy straight away. But when you'd finished entering it anyway, he would look at all the figures just to make sure it was all
and
all
he might
okay.
Notice something a little bit more not too obvious.
Yeah. That us, who wasn't as highly trained as they were. There was other people. There was a leading stoker who was in charge of the exhaust steam, because the exhaust steam, you had to maintain a slight pressure in the line, and he did it by adjusting the valves where the exhaust steam came out. There was a turbo generator down there with a watch keeper on. There was two sets of evaporators. Well, a double set of evaporators with a watch keeper on, and a single evaporator with a watch keeper on. So there's quite a few people down there, about 9-10 on 24 hours a day. This was, they were there at sea.
And what was it like in the engine room then? Or was it much the same as it had been in the boiler room?
Well, it was hot.
Okay.
But not as hot as the boiler room. Because, I mean, the boiler room, the boilers had a metal front. And although they were brick-lined on the inside, the bricks were red hot and a lot of heat radiated from it. In the engine room, everything was thickly, heavily lagged with asbestos, blue asbestos, you know.
You weren't aware of it then, though. I mean,
we didn't know. I mean, when I was Tiffy's mate to John Freston, like in harbour, because he would be watchkeeping at sea, the same as me. In harbour, he would have his duties. And if we had to take, or he had to take a valve out, he'd say, righto, take all the lagging off of there for this distance. And I'd be up there hammering like hell, catching as much as I could. Dust everywhere, all lagging, you know. And we did it. It's a matter of course. And then a lagger, who would be a leading stoker or a PO, would come and re-lag it after we'd finished. And he would mix up the blue asbestos from powder, which you'd chuck in a bucket or a bin, it's all and mix it with water and then slap it on. But it would be everywhere, this stuff. They reckon most engine room branch, when they have a test, they've got it in the lungs, but not enough to do any damage. It does damage some people, but everybody shows it. I mean, I've never been tested, but if I was tested, I would show it. Especially as later on, when I was a PO, I was the lagger on the Superb.